Head on Fire is a Patreon-supported podcast. Supporters of the show get early access to audio and video content, episode archives, monthly roundtables, a book club, and more. All benefits are offered on a sliding scale, so no matter your level of donation, you never miss out. If you like this show, consider supporting it with a dollar a month or whatever you can at patreon.com/headonfirepod. Thanks, and enjoy the show. I'm gonna start off this episode with a pretty hot take. I don't like Chips Ahoy cookies. I know. I'm sure that many of you are screaming at your speakers or your headphones or yelling at me in your minivan. But I don't like Chips Ahoy cookies. They're soft. Like, I love a soft cookie, but I don't really love the way that Chips Ahoy cookies are soft. They just kind of like mush around in my mouth. But yet, every now and then, I get the urge to try Chips Ahoy cookies again, to give them another go, to go like get a little package and see, maybe I was wrong this whole time. Maybe they're secretly the best thing out there and that's why they've been around forever. Maybe I am what is wrong with my experience with Chips Ahoy cookies. And so I go to the store and I get a bag or a box or whatever we're calling the little weird plastic thing that the tray comes in, and I open them up and I eat one and I am disappointed all over again. But I try. I give Chips Ahoy my money and I try again every few years. Why? Because their marketing is really effective on me sometimes. We all fall into that trap sometimes, don't we? We fall into this trap of thinking that we need a particular product or a particular service because we saw an ad or we saw 27 ads, all subtly convincing us that we might be better, our lives might be better, our days might just be a little bit brighter if we had this thing or we went to this place or we consumed this particular service. Effective marketing, when done really, really well, lets us kind of reimagine our lives. It lets us aspire to be a better, more put together, more healthy, well-adjusted version of ourselves. And marketers try to do that using all sorts of products and services. You know, if we consume this particular candy, our day might be better. We might be in a better mood. If I go to this particular gym over the other gyms, I might be a healthier person. I might be more motivated to stay with my exercise routine. If I buy these shoes, I'm going to jump higher, right? But the thing is, here in the United States, we also have other kinds of marketing that you don't really see around the world. We have pharmaceutical marketing. So we go into our doctor's offices and we say, well, I've seen this ad on TV and I want to try this particular medication, right? You know, we have marketers trying to tell us things and create conversations in our lives that are pretty unique to American marketing. But how do they know? How do they know how to make their ads? How do they know how to perfectly tailor them to exactly what I am looking for at 2 a.m. when I cannot sleep? Like, how do these folks know? The thing is, when you start looking behind the curtain of marketing, it gets kind of scary. It gets kind of weird because you start realizing how much marketers know about us. I mean, they know us better than we know ourselves, not in like the detailed ways that, like, you know, your loved ones might know you, but they know what you're going to buy. They know why you're going to buy things. They know what matters to you in some pretty specific ways. I wanted to ask an expert about marketing because it's big and it's broad and on many levels, it's pretty cool, but it's also scary and daunting and confusing. And it's one of those subjects that a lot of us think we already know a lot about, but don't, because we're not actually behind the curtain of marketing. My guest today is Haley Grant. She's the Vice President of Strategy for VaynerMedia and has worked on campaigns from everything from Pfizer and Viagra all the way to peanuts and all points in between. Ads that VaynerMedia have done have appeared in the Super Bowl and are probably somewhere in a screen near you or on a page or something. They're one of the largest marketing firms here in the United States, and their ads affect global brand marketing. And I wanted to ask her, you know, what's up with marketing and how much do you all actually know about us? Here's my conversation with Haley Grant. Haley Grant, welcome to Head on Fire. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
So you, what do you do? You are in the marketing world. Good Tell question. Folks a little bit about what you do professionally.
Good question. Well, on paper, my job title, and I work in advertising. I live in New York City. I've worked in the industry for 15 years now. Currently, I am a VP of strategy at a company called VaynerMedia. It's a consumer advertising agency. But if you, you know, ask a lady on the street, she might say I'm a bullshit artist. if you ask people in the industry, they might mistaken me for a researcher or, you know, like a stage clown. I play a lot of roles in my job.
You've done a lot of things, and just from knowing you for all of those 15 plus years, you've worked on some pretty big accounts that some folks might know. What kinds of accounts have you worked on?
Well, I feel like I need to give you like the whole shebang. I started my career in advertising during the peak of the recession, and I got a job miraculously in 2008, starting in pharmaceutical advertising. And I was just so happy to be in New York, and I would have worked at McDonald's to live here. Like, I was just very
okay. You happy say that, but that's here. Not hyperbole. I remember distinctly you went to New York, did not know anyone. Have a job and you were on Craigslist trying to like find people to live with.
I found a roommate on Craigslist and I moved to New York, I think all within a 2-week span.
Yes. Yeah.
And I just, yeah, I, you know, when we were in college, Mad Men was like the show and I was like, oh yeah, I can do that. That sounds good. Pays more than journalism, which is what I originally wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And then went into advertising and it's been 15 amazing years. And I started my career in account management and new business. I worked in like cancer drugs and flu drugs and everything in between. And that was just a whole journey in and of itself. So if you need to ask me stories about working on an erectile dysfunction pitch, happy to talk about it. And about 7 years ago, I went into consumer advertising, which was always my first love and what I wanted to do since college. And since then, oh my gosh, I worked on many categories under the sun. I've worked for Budweiser and Stella and Chase Bank and Kraft Heinz, including mac and cheese and Planters and Kool-Aid and the little children's water called Creative Roots and Bose headphones and St. Jude Children's Hospital. And I'm sure I'm forgetting many more projects in between. Captain Morgan, basically like all of the things on your liquor bar and in your refrigerator and in your cabinet, I've probably made a piece of content for it.
So I feel like when people hear I work in marketing, you get one of two pop culture like responses. Either you are just sort of a girl that works in marketing and you happen to be the lead in like a romantic comedy and it means nothing except at the very end where you have to give like a very inspirational pitch and somehow the marketing pitch is also like a pitch to get the guy back. Maybe. Yeah.
And he's like, how dumb was I? Oh my God. I mean, like, is the one.
Right. Like I'm thinking of like, Friends with Benefits or whatever with Justin Timberlake and Mila Kunis. And it's like that's the marketing world. Or you get something like really like incredibly dark, like, Thanks for Smoking or Mad Men or something like that. Like, it's either like, we are all this evil cabal of people trying to like sell you terrible things, or marketing is just like fun with stickers and folders and PowerPoint and stuff. So what is marketing?
Oh my God. It's really just a bunch of like grown-up kids trying to sound important. No, I'm kidding. It's, I think whenever we talked about your podcast and you were talking about diving deep into things big and small, marketing is taking all of the smallest things in our lives and trying to make them as big as possible. That's really like what we're all doing sitting in rooms every day. We're in the business of branding anything from the cereal that you eat in the morning to the way that you feel about your hair when you wake up to what you like to do on a night off. If you are looking through the evil lens of this, you could make the case that it's like we are creating a bottomless pit of want and capitalistic need and consumerism and things like that. And I am a student of the school of expansive thought, so I think that can be true. At the same time, that trying to tell stories that are the truth of our lives and reflect a little bit more of our humanity. And if you're going to have to sell product and, market things, why not do it through a lens that makes people laugh or makes their lives easier, actually adds value to their lives. And so, what I like about my current job is that we are allowed to say that we hate advertising, which is like, it's, you know, that we also think of like us in a boardroom, like smoking a cigarette with a billboard that's like, here's my 30-second commercial. And at the end, it's going to be like Mucinex, you know, and like, it'll be like Black Lives Matter, buy Mucinex. Like that's like the joke. But it's really not like that. It's really like, we're trying to come up with things that are like a music video or a movie trailer or an actual content series that reflects, you know, people's lives. It's just trying to add more truth to, you know, how you actually interact with stuff every day.
So to figure out what we want before we even know that we want it, you probably have to do a lot of research. And I think that there is a perception amongst people, especially as social media has pretty much taken over all of our lives in the last several years. Yeah. There's this perception that in marketing, you know, like everything about everyone, like all the time. Like how much do marketing agencies really know about us? Like, do you all know as much about us as we think you do?
We know a lot. It's kind of creepy. And like, we always try to find the line, like right now, because in 2022, whatever year we're in now, we are in the age of big data. We are in the age of programmatic advertising, which is like, we don't actually have to go and find the right places to put ads. Computers do that for us. So say you're walking in the mall and you go into a Tumi store and you're looking at a wallet and then you leave and your phone is next to your partner's phone because you guys are sitting on the couch later and he opens Facebook. There's a very high chance that he's going to get served an ad by Tumi because your geolocation of your phone was in that store 3 hours ago and now it's next to the other
phone. I don't like that. That's very Brave New World. I don't like it.
I know.
No, thank you.
And the sender. Yeah. And so I think, you know, there's always the question of like, what could you do? And now because we have access to so much, we're now asking ourselves, what should we do? We should know enough so that things are relevant to you and meaningful and actually adds value to your life, but not so much that you're like, I literally just thought this in my head and I got like an ad or I saw a piece of content and then freaked out. Like, you know, even if the marketers know your middle name and your horoscope, perhaps, you know, don't share that. But I will say, like, behind the curtain there, at least in my organization at Vayner, there is a lot of debate about methodology of how we target people. And we use a phrase when we think about, especially in social advertising, because social media is changing the entire world of advertising. We are going from you know, like TV centric commercials that are like, buy Scott's Miracle-Gro for your lawn this season. And it's very ad focused to a world where the majority of the media that we consume isn't consumed on the TV. It's on your phone and it's within the context of platforms. And so how you have to show up as a brand and as a marketer is entirely different. And you can't just be like, white men who live in Chicago, right? Like that can't be your target anymore because there's so many. So on social, we use a phrase called cohorts. And it's just like the normal definition of cohorts, people with shared experiences. And as we think about how we come up with a bunch of them. So let's just say I'm selling this microphone that I'm speaking into right now. And they have a goal. They want to sell 1 million microphones, right?
I would like to sell a million of anything, please.
Like, please, can I sell 1 million microphones? Now, instead of being like, great, let's come up with 1,000 ways to sell microphones and make one TV spot and spend $1 million on it and test the shit out of it. Now it is, let's reverse engineer how we sell 1 million microphones. There's probably 47 different kinds of people in the world who need microphones. There's people like me, a person with a corporate job who occasionally has to go on media and speak from my house and sound like a professional, you know? And then there's people like you who like actually run podcasts and this is your job and you absolutely must have a microphone. And then there's people who are like, I want to record my grandpa's life story and I want to pass it down to my kids. And so those all become different cohorts. And when you think about targeting people and you think about race and you think about socioeconomic status and you think about region, it's an ethical gray zone. And so as, you know, as marketers, there's constantly a responsibility to serve, you know, is the, like the media term when you like send out an ad to the world, that you're targeting it in a way that is true to the person and is actually helpful to their lives, but isn't stereotyping them, typecasting them. Like, for example, one of the debates that we had a couple years ago is marketing, you know, Kool-Aid to Black families. How do you think about consumption, but then against stereotypes that have existed in our culture? And is it even right to consider it, even if it's a business target, right? And then you get into conversations like that. And those are things that marketers absolutely have to be accountable to every day. And there's a lot of people in leadership who grew up in a different time, got to do a lot of things, you know, behind closed doors of a boardroom. That's really not how marketing works anymore. You get a lot of feedback from the market almost immediately via the comments section. And you kind of have to, you can't really be a shitty person if you're going to be a marketer anymore.
Anymore.
You can't. Like there's a big asterisk there. It's a big asterisk. And you know, and even from when I started in this career to now, there's been such a shift of, the people in the room. When I started, there were very few women in advertising that were in leadership positions. Even though I was like, I feel like particularly lucky because I've heard, especially in New York City, advertising can be a very toxic place. That's very cutthroat. And to your joke at the beginning about like, is it a rom-com or is it like, thank you for smoking? There's definitely the, you know, like the, especially the PR space. If you want to get into all the drama of the marketing field, the PR space is like the chain smoking women will stab each other in the back just to get the story. You know, like there's still places like that. But it's, you know, when I started, it was run, the leadership in the C-suite were men. And now I'm at a, you know, now I'm a VP of a company. As a woman, my chief strategy officer who's in the C-suite is a woman. You know, and it's just a different kind of place now.
You know, it was funny, your sort of example of like the worst of marketing, yeah, that we've seen recently is like, you know, Black Lives Matter, blackout, Black Lives Matter by Mucinex, you know, which
not a real ad.
No, But it is indicative of a lot of really poorly timed ads that do exist and come out all the time. You know, so often an ad will come out that feels either pointless or tone deaf or just flat out bad. And then there's like this tidal wave of, you know, backlash online that just ranges from anywhere between like, you know, how could anyone have looked at this and said,
How did
yes,
this get
let
out
this go.
the door?
Who thought this was a good idea? You know, da 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 da. You know, one of the things that actually got you and I texting earlier this year was like the M&M's ad, where they decided to like, oh, we need to rebrand all of
Yeah.
our anthropomorphic M&M's, and we need to rebrand those. And people, you know, you have anything from like, what, who looked at this? Who checkmarked this? And then all the way down to like, were we even asking for this? Is this
Yeah.
something that we even wanted?
You're like, how does this
So,
even happen?
yeah, how many layers of people does an ad go through before we see it? Because I think a lot of people are like, there's got to be a lot of people. How did nobody see this?
There's got to be one boardroom full of someone, right?
Right.
There. So it should be a lot of layers. If you were looking at the history of marketing is that you've got a team of like, let's just use the level of brand, you know, like M&M's. There's usually a team of 20 marketers that work for M&M's and they are M&M's employees and they are being like, we got to do something big this year. And then you've got a team, you know, on an advertising team, there's usually 20 people who across strategy, account, project management, copywriters, art directors, producers, who, you know, are working with them. One of the cases that I think I still don't know how to this day, it got out was the Pepsi ad with Kendall Jenner, when it was a fake protest.
Phenomenal example
Right?
of
Yeah.
just
How did this?
how did so many people get this so very wrong?
And I'll tell you that for this one, a lot of brands, a lot of businesses are fancying themselves that they're, okay, so if you're not familiar in marketing, which is like an entire sector, there's marketers who are business folks who are responsible for running the businesses and work for the businesses who work for M&M's and Pepsi and things like that. And then there's advertising agencies. They're usually responsible for creative output and media strategies. That's the side that I work on. We don't own any brands. We work on different brands all the time, the brands, the clients. And in the last, I'd say 5 years, marketers are taking more of that discipline of creative output in-house, as they say, building their own internal brand agencies. For example, ABI, which is Anheuser-Busch, I don't even know ABI. They make Budweiser and own pretty much almost every beer in America. They have an in-house agency called Draftline, and these in-house agencies can be wonderful. They can save costs and they know the brand best. And so, like, there are many cases where this is a positive thing. When it is a negative thing, is in the example of the Kendall Jenner Pepsi ad, when you have a room full of executives just giving themselves a round of applause, and you're having very, I'm sorry, there's no other word to use it, but very masturbatory meetings as it relates to their own opinions. And there's no one from the outside sort of checking in. There's no checks and balances. Or there's a person who is in a position of power who has been giving feedback to creative teams who say, yes, we'll make the changes. Oh, that's too direct. We can't even have any specific topics of protest. We can't be political as Pepsi, but we want to make a stance on what side of history we stand on. So you get these have you ever heard like a camel is a horse built by committee? It's like, you know, that's what you get. You get like a camel commercial, and it's just so terrible. On the flip side, the only way to escape that is being willing to take the hit. If you were Nike doing a Colin Kaepernick ad after he was banned from the NFL, or if you're Ben and Jerry's, doing multiple things that they do in terms of standing up for different causes in the United States and calling it out by name. You have to be willing to stand up. You have to be willing to show momentum against the
Disney is going
cause.
through that the past couple
Ooh,
of
girl,
weeks.
Disney, baby,
Di
what's going on here, honey? Let's look at those revenue streams and think about things, even if you can't from your own conscience.
I mean, Disney is about as gay of a brand as it gets, and it is just still so firmly rooted in not losing whatever the words family friendly means. They're just holding on to the last vestiges of like, oh, we're not quite there yet. And it's like the gay millennials are like, we are done waiting.
You're like, I last time I checked, this has been a conversation that's been happening for 20 years. And I know what those rooms like on the other side in advertising feel like. You always hear the phrase like, we don't want to alienate our base audience while we grow our growth audience. But at the same time, like you have to be willing to face the reality of the situation. You have to be willing to just be ready for for whatever consequences there are. And as Disney, you do have a responsibility to
And
move society forward and be accountable.
I just think, how much was this costing Disney? Or did they think it was going to cost Disney that the CEO caved and caved that fast? It must have been bad. It must have been bad.
I'm guessing somebody ran into that boardroom with a spreadsheet and was like, girl, you
It
better
was just
get
doing
right with
this.
God. You better get right with gay God if you want to remain successful, because honey, they are going to come for you and your whole village that you're about to create in Florida for all the Disney fans to live in. You can kiss it goodbye because nobody will go.
I just
I
think,
don't
I'm like,
know.
does Disney not,
I
did
don't
you
know a
think
ton
you would
about
ex
it, but
yeah, do you think that you would exist without gays and people that love gays? Because gays are keeping your industry afloat, bud.
And also, like, brands are kind of in this growing pain moment, and I have a lot of empathy for marketers who are trying to modernize and change against an absolutely archaic system of people. Like, if you think about, we're millennials, right? We're in our, cute 30s, and we are, and the majority of managers in large corporations are millennials. And the people who are in C-suite are, I think that they're a majority Gen X, at least in like marketing and advertising fields. And when you get into like finances, things like that, of course, you've still got like the boomer generation.
Finance is so old, and it's at
Finance.
least 20 years behind. It's so old. We could talk
Absolutely.
finance all day.
Oh, girl. Like, as you know, so we still have like, we still have generational blind spots, and it's only the companies that are willing to listen down to younger generations, to their employees who actually understand how the world works and like what communication looks like now, and like understand things like when a Reddit channel like single-handedly changed GameStop stock to skyrocket because they were pissed off about, the market shorting it. Like, these are the people who are actually making financial, cultural decisions, who are actually setting the pace of attention and setting the pace of public and popular opinion. And those who are in other generations, unless you are willing to change and lean in, you are going to get left behind. And it's a, as technology accelerates, as social media platforms allow people more and more influence in the world, brands are kind of like scrambling to keep up. They're like, oh my God, like New Balance, we're dad shoes. Like, should we be the dad shoe brand now? Like, I don't know. The answer is both. The answer is like, yes, like
Yes, and
make your heteronormative, like cis white hero movie, and also make the gayest Disney film of all time. Make them both because there
yeah,
is room
Ryan
for
Reynolds
all of
seems to
it.
get that. Ryan Reynolds
Yeah,
seems to get that. He's like, play
he
for
does.
everyone.
Honestly, like the entire industry learns so much from Ryan Reynolds every time he does something, mainly because like he does, it's like he does the fuck you to the marketing world in the most like you can laugh with him. Like we are sitting there being roasted by Ryan Reynolds every time he does something for his brand Aviation Gin, and we are here for it. We're like, yes, Ryan Reynolds, like take us to goddamn town. Like, and we love it. And we eat it up as marketers. We're like, yes, burn it down, Ryan Reynolds. He does it very good. He's very
So
good.
I know that you talked earlier about when you started off in the industry, there were not a lot of women, and now that does seem to be changing. But I do kind of want to bring it back to there is a common refrain, especially whenever just tone deaf ads come out, where one asks, were there no people of color in the room? Were there no queer people in the room? Did absolutely, no women see this ad before it came out and then find out, oh, it's a women-run agency. And it's like, are you, what women? I want to see the women. Where were the women that put this ad out? Like that kind of thing. So is that a consideration for agencies? Is it a consideration for these in-house marketers? Is do they care? Are they changing? Are they changing fast enough?
It's like, like I think that there's just so much silo when you are in it. You're just sort of like, there are agencies and there are companies where you are in survival mode. I think there are a lot of companies where ego still runs the show, and I'm being like really broad, but I think there are situations where agencies or marketers create a ton of pressure for output. Having the best idea is not necessarily what's best for consumers, but it's what's best for the subjective opinion of the leaders who are at the companies, to make their bosses happy. And it's when that type of decision making is the norm within an agency, that's when you get ads like you're like, did anyone check on this? Did any, like Dove has done really wonderful things, but also Dove's had some misses in in the last couple of years. And I'm pretty sure they're majority women run, but there is an awareness. And I think in the industry, there is a bad habit of serving yourself and your own agenda for success and your desire to get awards and recognized by your peers in the marketing industry. And then there are actually doing what is reflective of your people that you're speaking to, the culture that we're in right now, this year, and then being brave enough to put words against what is actually happening this year. There is, I'm trying to think of a Made in Form, I think is the brand. I'm gonna have to like look it up while we're
I
talking
think,
because and they have this wonderful ad about women's bodies and basically the ode to the uterus and all of the things, all of the amazing, wonderful, disgusting, violent, painful, beautiful things that happen to a uterus. And they make this incredible commercial. You should put it in your show notes as a link of like somebody who's doing it right and brave enough. Is it Body Form? Yes, it's Body Form. It's called Womb Stories. Like WOMB stories, just to bring it back to something that's worth celebrating. I think there are places where true stories are really being told. And the more that marketers can go away from like Black Lives Matter by Mucinex, just going back to that, and more towards telling stories that feel like real stories, that feel like content that you would want to watch and follow. And actually consume, the more freedom that you'll have to tell a true story. You won't feel like you need to fit the truth in a 30-second spot, which is why sometimes you get these absolutely idiotic pieces of shit. Sorry. And you have more space to do it, and more time.
How do you decide who a product or service is for? And do you ever have to take a breath before a product or service that is geared towards groups like children, young children, the elderly, folks who need care, sensitive groups? How do you decide who a product is for? And is there a special bubble around some groups?
That's a very good question.
Thank you. I'm a professional podcaster.
So if we're getting into the details, the marketer who is the client of an advertising agency typically looks at some spreadsheets and some numbers and see who is currently buying products that are like the category, and then make a what they call a design target or a, you know, audience. By the way, my dog would like to be on the podcast. So he is doing an interpretive dance with his tiptoes right below me. So if you hear a little
Hi,
tap tap,
Archie.
it's because Archie's tap dancing and wanting to be in the podcast. But there's usually a design target. In my actual personal experience, I have a lot of input on who the target is because I work in consulting specifically within my company. And so we can kind of say, like, our job isn't to service you as a client. Our job is for you to steal our brains and let us tell you what we think. And so a lot of times we're like, great, thank you for your design target. We're just going to place it over here for a second and actually think about who's benefiting. And we are also going to tell you what the strategy should be with the audience. So I think Gen Alpha is one of these audiences that fits within your gray zone that I think is quite interesting because we're getting a lot of questions from businesses about, like, oh my God, look at Ryan's world. He has like over 4 million subscribers on YouTube and he's already selling his own product lines. How do we take what the magic of Ryan's world, which is an incredibly successful YouTube channel for a 9-year-old boy named Ryan, run by his parents who are complete momager, dadager, capitalist? And like, Ryan's having a great time, by the way, but I know we could unpack this and spend the whole episode on this.
That kid is going to have a Hulu documentary in 20 years.
I just really hope it's like not
I've
the
only
Macaulay
just now
path.
heard of this kid, and this kid's going to have a documentary. Without
Without a doubt. I mean,
a doubt.
his energy is high octane, and so are his parents. Anyway, that's not your question. Sorry, my phone is ringing. But your question about gray audiences, Gen Alpha is one of them where we as marketers are grappling with, like, we know businesses are asking, and we're like, we are not going to give you. So, for example, Gen Z is an audience. They're, you know, 17 to 25 right now. We approach those narratives like, here are the things that you absolutely have to get right with this generation in order to have a chance, you know, like back to the point about having causes. You know, like purpose without momentum is fraud to them. So don't even do it unless you're willing to prove it. When it comes to audiences like Gen Alpha, we're like, we're not telling you how to market to them yet. What we are going to tell you is how to make their parents' lives easier. So you are looking for ways to, again, like back to the original goal. If you are not the villain of the marketing story, but trying to be the hero, you're always trying to find ways to add actual value. Empathize with what the audience wishes that you would empathize with, not what your agenda is as a business or a brand, and to try to reflect that reality a bit more. So if it is like, I don't know, Creative Roots water, which is like a plant flavored water, it's really about the fact that like kids be hydrated, dehydrated. Half of kids are dehydrated. Parents are just like, please, can you just like not have Coke anymore? Can you just drink some water? And they're like, no, I'd rather die. So you create characters like the Sploots, which are like Saturday morning cartoons trying to hawk some plant water to an 8-year-old, hopefully to make a parent's life easier to hydrate their kids. To
I would like
your
a sploot.
right, like a Sploot is cute. It's a little cactus who says like hydrate. I actually don't know if it's like launched, but
Cactus.
right?
I would love a cactus to tell me to be hydrated,
Yeah.
please.
And the flop side of that is like you were asking about elderly audiences. Now, I'm not about to go on a tangent about reverse mortgages and infomercials like that. It's too emotionally damaging. I don't think it's a good thing. I think there are definitely predatory marketing practices like reverse mortgages and like additional life insurance policies and just those kinds of things that are pretty on TV, if that's
Fear-based. There's a
is
lot of
the
fear-based
yeah,
marketing aimed
exactly.
towards the elderly.
Yes. And so I mean I would say like you know, fuck those people. if I just to put it, you know, in a very polite manner, I'm just kidding. But there are brands like OXO, which is a, you know, they sell pots and pans.
Sure, sure.
They were created for people with disabilities and dexterity issues. They're supposed to be easier to open, easier to
know that.
Right. So sometimes whenever you see TikTok videos that are like making fun of a really weird product that has like a funky handle, and you're like, why not just use a knife to cut your apple? Like, why
I learned that years ago somewhere in college, where it was like, well, the reason why that this exists is because there's somebody that's having problems putting their socks on by themselves.
Yes.
Or there's somebody that's, you know, that has grip issues. And you know what is in my drawer in my kitchen right now is a little thingy that helps me open jars. And exactly. It's not that I have grip issues, it's that some jars are really tight, and if it can help them, it can help me too.
Right. Yeah. And that's a thing. And like, I think there are specialized products that are made for specialized markets. And then for that business to be viable and scalable, they find inventive uses, like, you know, Dawn and the jar opener. It was for like your mama, but like, you love it and you'll buy it too. So they're like, great, helping people while continuing to scale. So hopefully we see more models like that, right? And
I need my pickled jalapenos.
Right. And using, and as in, you know, working in advertising, my dream is like, when you work on technology brands or something like that, that they are creating more digital literacy for older groups who, you know, need that in their lives. And as they become older, and as like Moore's Law makes technology exponentially, like, you know, accelerate in terms of its evolution, I hope that we are interested in bringing everyone along for the ride, not just the first adopters or the cool Gen Z or whatever the next generation is, and that we are actually doing, we are giving back in any way that you can to help people along the way too.
Since we're talking about sensitive groups and deciding who gets sold what, I want to talk about who is selling what to whom. And I'm specifically referring to representation in ads. It is still like, my husband and I will still like run into the living room and be like, there's a gay person in this ad. Because it still shocks me. Like, you know, there's a few years ago, Kindle did a really cute ad where there's like a guy and a girl and they're both really pretty and you think they're together, but no, both of their husbands are back at the bar and we're going to talk about our Kindles or something. You know, but I'm curious because it does feel like in the little weird halcyon world that all of the people that are in various commercials live in, it is still very cisgender, heterosexual, white, you know, and all of those things. And then every now and then a product is for someone else, or a product at least is inclusive of someone else. So who decides who is in an ad, and does the industry seem like it's trying to reflect the world in which the marketers live?
Is this another episode? Because I could just wax poetic on this piece here. But one, I'll just say that, like, ultimately, the subjective opinion of the marketer who is in charge is the person who gets to choose the casting. Like, that is something that's happened for a long time. The reason a lot of brands still rely on these norms, one, because they don't have the time, intelligence, nuance, or agency to get it right. So they're scared. And so they stick with what they know so that they don't get canceled. You know, like, there's definitely marketers who don't have the money, the access, or the knowledge to understand who to hire in order to truly understand the market that they're in. And they rely on outdated data. So for all the data that we have, a lot of it is like, you know, a lot of it is outdated, even from a year ago, even from 2 years ago, because really we should just be looking at data from this year and be looking at the internet and seeing what's happening at scale there, and then being a little less precious with finding a majority or a statistically significant percentage before we make a decision. And a lot of marketers are still looking for what it's called, like, stat sig in the industry, statistically significant. in order to justify what audiences that you represent in the media where you spend the most money. So you might see a brand that has only white, cis, heteronormative people on TV. And then you go to their social and you look at their paid ads on social, and they might be representing more groups. The thing that they also fight against, or I think the thing that they overlook, is that a lot of that data isn't reflecting the true makeup of our society and our reality, because anything that hasn't been that norm, people of color, people of part of the LGBTQIA plus community, are suppressed in the numbers of reality and society, and have been forced to suppress themselves and self-identifying. So of course, if you're only looking for quote scalable audiences, it's going to skew heteronormative, because that's how all of us have been conditioned to be comfortable with identifying ourselves. I think that's changing quickly. I think that it's happening in pockets where people care. I think it happens when organizations hire people who reflect the world now. And there's a lot of systematic change that needs to overcome, because even things like requiring college degrees to get a job in advertising means disproportionately that socioeconomically disadvantaged people, and disproportionately people of color, are not going to get at bats in the same way. And so, like, for example, what I also like about my company is that we don't require a college degree to work at the company, because there's a concerted effort to try to change the makeup so that there are enough people in the room that there's not just one token Black person in your room helping you make sure that you don't fuck up a brand that is catering to like Black hair. They are the one person in the room. Are you kidding? You're going to put all of the pressure on that one person to say something who just started, who's in a middle management position, whose boss is like some white dude, and you're going to put all the pressure on that person to veto it in the room. How about we make a more equitable boardroom making decisions? And how about we create an environment where the people who work there are empowered to say something, encouraged to say something, and celebrated and rewarded when they do? And until we evaluate our success structures in the world of marketing, literally things like bonuses and stuff like that, when we think about all of the process and the stuff that makes agencies work, I think systematically, like, there's people are up against a lot to act like people at their job. I think, you know, you forget because you're thinking about your promotion. You're not thinking about, you know, if you're actually doing the right thing sometimes. And that's the human flaw of it all, I think, that we want to look out for each other. And so we have to look out for ourselves first. And I think there's a lot of industries where that might be true, you know, not just marketing, but that is kind of that's the tea on that one.
I want to get into two areas where there is a lot of gray area. There's a lot of great things that happen in marketing in these areas. But if you think about any of them a little bit too much, sort of like our earlier discussion about like algorithm driven, you know, technology driven advertising, if you think about it just a little bit too much, you just want to hide under your bed forever and never go anywhere. The first is more banal. And it's creating new markets. Now, there's a pretty famous story, like with Febreze. When Febreze first came out, people were like, "Why? I don't need one more thing to scent my home. It's whatever. Glade already exists. I already have candles. There's all sorts of things. I don't need this." And then, from what I understand, at least for my little bit of research that I did for the show, to speak to you, the folks at the marketers for Febreze went and thought, well, what if we tell folks that they're nose blind to their own home? They don't realize their home smells so terrible. And the thing is, all their friends and family love them so much, they would never tell them that their home smells nasty and disgusting, and their clothes that they wear to work smell nasty and disgusting. So if we tell people that they're nose blind to everything, well, then they'll, and you know what, it worked. And suddenly there was a whole new market for people buying Febreze because they thought, oh my God, does my home stink?
I know a guy who worked on that campaign.
Oh my God. He's an evil genius.
Yeah, right. Because
everybody's now constantly worried that their home smells and nobody's telling them. So how do you go about creating new markets, and do you have to sell your soul to actual Satan to do it?
Oh, it's like a chicken or an egg conversation, because something on one side of the coin, the businesses, you know, I think it was maybe, was it Unilever or P&G who made Febreze? I can't remember. They're in Cincinnati. P&G maybe? Procter & Gamble. They have a building somewhere outside of their corporate building called the Research and Development Center. And they take all of the products that they've ever made and they try to make new iterations, new flavors, new innovations. Their sole job is to evolve brands, taking equities from other brands. So the scent of your fabric softener, for example, and thinking of ways to create what's called like a blue ocean. So there's like Red Sea and there's Blue Ocean. I'm probably getting it wrong in the business world. If you have an MBA and you've read the book, oops, sorry if I got it wrong. But there's basically Red Sea. There's already blood in the water. The market is saturated. And then there's Blue Ocean, which is like, it's all starts with like, how do we continue to proliferate our capitalist society and make money and like continue to raise our revenue goals, because you know, like steady revenue year over year is a fail in businesses. Then it gets, you know, handed off to the advertising. We have this new product. You spray it on your sheets and it makes them smell good. We need to drive demand, increase consideration, and convert people into buying this in trial. So then you go and you try to find, you just try to find the white space. It might have been like sitting in a focus group with 12 moms who are at home and they're like, here's this product. Like, why would you need it? And you'd get like an insight. There might've been a mom who's like, has a 12-year-old son who's like a smelly soccer kid. And she's like, I don't know, I just don't notice it. And then my friend got in the car the other day and vomited. Like, then they're like, some copywriter somewhere is like, Eureka, it's no one. There's so many puns that are happening. Like, you're like, I don't know, like scent blind. And they're like, what about this? What about this? It's usually a pun. Insight comes into the form of a pun. Then you have fun. Then you just feel so, you're like, oh my God, I came up with a nose blind. Then you're like, let me make a spot. Let me do this. And sometimes, sometimes it actually genuinely fulfills a specific need that somebody's been asking for years. And sometimes we've just created a new need. And you as a marketer get to decide, you know, how much you're going to lean into it.
Do you ever personally, and maybe not you, or do you, or are there people that you've seen work on accounts where, you know, you do end up creating a new need or a new trend or something that isn't good? That is maybe a little less, maybe I didn't put good into the world with this one. Sort of the trend equivalent of a Kendall Jenner Pepsi commercial. Like, oh, what did I do here?
Like if there was like a Jackass brand that created, like Jackass the show.
Sure.
Created things. I don't know. I'm trying to think, because, you know, I think if you work in marketing, you probably have a blind spot to the things that you've created in the world.
Oh, are you nose blind?
I might be biased. I might have some blindness
on your memory.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. You could even think about things like Tamiflu making a commercial telling you it's okay to give it to your 2-year-old who get the flu. You could make the case that it's a life-saving measure that now parents feel comfortable doing when they feel helpless when their child has the flu. And then you could be on the flip side of that and be like, great, we're just pumping our kids full of prescription drugs from the time of their infants to now, like whatever happened to like an ice bath and some popsicles and like, you know, Price is Right on a Saturday morning. But I do think like fashion, beauty categories, if you're working in those categories, there's a fine line, especially if you're working in social. We already know the data. We already saw the whistleblower from Facebook who went in front of Congress and reported that there was data showing that Instagram was detrimental to teen, women's mental health, adding increased feelings of anxiety, and they suppressed the data or didn't action on it. Now, as an advertiser, you might be working on, Fenty or Olay. That might be something that you do. And you need to make sure that as part of your, at least like, so in my job, I'm a strategist. I'm responsible for working with creative teams. We are the ones like scouring TikTok and Instagram and Facebook and looking at things that people are doing, trying to find authentic connections to the brand, looking at the types of people who are using the product or mentioning it or doing things with similar products, finding things that are fun and trending. And then you get to make a decision whether or not you use it. And hopefully, we are eyes wide open to the data that's coming out, and at least doing what we can. It's sort of like the proverb of like throwing a starfish into the sea, and there's so many other starfish on the beach. And the guy's like, "Why did you throw away one?" And you're like, "It mattered to that one." So every, I think, you have to do your part of at least saying things and having the conversations. But yeah, there's definitely things that, and advertising the entire industry, like if we want to go into the history, we are responsible for a majority of people's insecurities from, the last 100 years. I was in a flea market in Brooklyn last weekend, and they had an entire section of vintage ads from like magazines from like the 1950s, and there were these prints, and I was going through them, and Dawn, I was clutching my pearls of like the sexism and classism and racism and just the
Did you
things
have
that
your
we would
Mona Lisa
do.
smile moment? Were you
I
Julia
was
Roberts, Mona Lisa smile, putting the slides up with the old ads? Like, who is this for? A girdle to set you
what
free.
is this even doing? Oh my gosh, there were things that like I'm not even going to repeat them on this podcast because I feel like I don't want to have like a Josh Safdie's Uncut Gems out of context meme made of me. Let's just say advertising the 1950s be racist and sexist and misogynist. And anyway, and I think we're in a very awkward growing pains period. I mean, even like the Bo Burnham's Inside has an entire song dedicated to how idiotic marketers sound whenever they're trying to do the right thing, but
Yes.
not taking the time to understand how to do the right thing. Or maybe the right thing is you not participating at all and just
That
donating some money and not publicizing it.
yeah, just give money and shut up about it. You know, if it comes out in a shareholder report, great, but like, you know, don't make a TV spot. You're actually leading me. You already mentioned it, but the other big gray area that I wanted to talk to you about is the intersection of marketing and pharmaceuticals. The United States, I do have an international audience, and so for many people, they're going to be going, "Wait, what do you mean marketing and pharmaceuticals?" Because in many parts of the
They'll be
world,
like, "Excuse me?"
right, in many parts of the world, there are not commercials for pharmaceuticals. There are not advertisements for pharmaceuticals. It is illegal to do so. And yet, here in the United States and in many countries, but big time in the United States, it's a big business. We do be selling drugs and a lot of it. And you've worked on some of the biggest accounts, like I believe you've worked on the Viagra account, which isn't that like the white whale for marketers? Like, isn't that like the biggest, or it was at one point like the biggest account in the world at one point?
It takes 10, well, on average, it takes 10 years, $1 billion to make a drug FDA approved. They have 7 years to make their money back. And Viagra was a happy accident during a time where men ran the show. So, yes, of course, it was like one of the biggest drugs in America at one point. Are we digging in? Shall
Oh
we?
yeah. Oh yeah. How do you
Let's dig
balance
in.
making people want to get a pharmaceutical while doing your ethical duty to inform folks of things like side effects and warnings and stuff like that?
So like, first, let's unpack. So first, let's acknowledge the reality that it is quite absurd in the United States that we market pharmaceutical drugs where in most places in the world, you just go to your doctor, right? Like
Yes.
that's just what you do.
Yeah.
Healthcare in the United States culturally is just
It's
10
disgusting.
ways of fucked up. Like,
Yes.
it's a very different, shall we say, hellscape in the United States. Healthcare, because I mean, it's like you have to, if you want to talk about pharmaceutical advertising, you have to talk about the health of the United States of America and the health of the healthcare system, which both are unhealthy. So then we know that generally we are less healthy as a country, which means we have way more healthcare going on, which means that pharmaceutical companies have way more demand in the United States. When you have way more demand in the United States, you have way more money to make more drugs. There is also a greater demand for you to develop new drugs for different illnesses, diseases, comorbidities, like things like that. And so you've kind of got this cycle going that bloats a pharmaceutical agency, or a company like Pfizer or like Novartis or Biogen and all of these things. And the money's crazy. Then you get into marketing. 10 years, $1 billion. You got 7 years to make your money back before it goes generic. And if you ask people who I worked with, at my first agency, which is a pharmaceutical agency, the singular goal is to empower patients with information so that they know what to ask their doctor. And even, in recent years, it's more about helping support the lifestyle and overall health of the person around taking the drug as much, more than it is about call your doctor today. So there is that of the people who work in pharmaceuticals do have good intentions about the intent of the communication to patients. They are trying to be like making the side effects that come with drugs more clear. Things, if you're a cancer patient and you have no choice but to take Avastin for having a terminal, brain tumor called glioblastoma, for your family and for yourself, you want to understand what's actually going to happen to you? How long will it, extend your life? What is the quality of life? And so there are a lot of questions. And on that side of the coin, I can support it. The reason that I personally got out of pharma school advertising is because while I'm sitting here on the front lines thinking I'm doing good by patients and empowering them with information, you're also driving demand of drugs that people don't know they have. And you, as you are very aware, I am from one of the biggest drug overdoses per capita in the United States. I'm from Southern Ohio, where Ohio, Kentucky, and West Virginia come together. There are more, right? Like shout out hometown. There are more overdoses from opioids in the area than any other place in the country. And my entire community that I grew up in was ravaged economically, psychologically, emotionally by pharmaceutical companies who irresponsibly put out pain medication. You can't reconcile the two. I think there's so much nuance that happens in pharmaceutical advertising, and there are a ton of good intentions, and I'm happy that there are people there trying to make that easier, but at the same time, maybe let's, I don't know, maybe let's make healthcare not such an important part of our capitalism, and maybe we won't kill so many people. I don't know. I'm not even talking about advertising at this point.
Well, you know what? That's a really good. I actually I opened this little section up by mentioning the fact that in many countries around the world, you can't advertise pharmaceuticals. To discuss pharmaceuticals is a conversation between you and your doctor. Do you think that the United States should follow suit?
I really, it would be
If you had a
easy.
wand, if it could just if you could just do it.
I can't say yes or no. What I can say is that, you know, what I think about when you ask me that question is how much time you spend in a doctor's office, how long you wait versus how much time you spend with your doctor, and then the decisions that you then get to make after. You could say that pharmaceutical communications are giving them more information because doctors in the United States are spending less and less and less time with patients. And like, I have a son, I just had a baby, and you know, 2 years ago, it was 2020. I gave birth in Manhattan. I fired two OBs because I would try to ask a question and they'd be like, I'm going to speak for 5 minutes and you will be allowed to ask two questions. And when we're done with those two questions, you will be leaving my office. And this was my first baby. I was like, fuck, man. Like, this is my first baby. I want to feel like you're going to take care of me. I'm terrified. And that experience sucked so much. I don't know if that's true. I have not lived in Europe, so cannot confirm, but my husband did have a panic attack when we were in Barcelona one time, and he had to go to the hospital in the middle of the night in Barcelona. We got picked up for free. He went and got an EKG in 2 hours and a prescription, and everything was free, and it was great. And I was like, oh, is this what healthcare is like in other countries? And my husband is European, he's Irish. And the doctor experience is a little different in Ireland than it is in the United States. So I would say I would love for there to be a reality where we pharmaceutical advertising was not necessary because doctors had time and were allowing space for patients to get proper communication and answers that they needed in the doctor's office. But I might be oversimplifying. We could just say that they're evil and fuck them.
I like that. I like that. Is there anything that companies won't or can't market?
They can't market alcohol to minors. They
Oh,
can't.
that's bullshit. Oh,
I
that
know,
is
right? Well, we're talking
that's
legal.
I mean, like, what constitutes marketing to minors?
Yeah.
I mean, how do you like an ad is on during, I don't know, well, I guess Euphoria doesn't play ads. What do the kids these
Oh
days
my gosh, I know. And if you watched Euphoria, Budweiser just got like the strangest product placement of all time in the show. Whenever the main character's like drunk driving in his Ford F-150 down a highway, chugging a Budweiser. I'm like,
But that's the thing,
what's
like
going
I
on
mean,
here?
what constitutes marketing to kid? I mean, like, you know, I kind of asked this earlier, but what even constitutes marketing to someone? Because product placement is in everything, whether you
Yeah.
realize that or not. You know, it, ads are in TV
I'm
shows, but
selling
everything.
you, we're selling Apple headphones right now.
We are. We really are. But like, you know, I don't know. I feel like sometimes people are like, oh, we're not marketing to these groups, but companies know what they're doing. Like they know where they're putting this ad.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's sort of like I love to call this like the Beavis and Butthead theory. I think that we give organizations and the leaders too much credit. So in Beavis and Butthead Do America, for your international audience, the premise of this 90s movie is that Beavis and Butthead Do America, through a series of very accidental events, they are perceived by the United States government to be incredible masterminds of conspiracy and chaos, when in fact Beavis and Butthead are just idiots. And I think the same thing is true of marketers. I think that there is far more negligence and ignorance than there is conspiracy and sort of back-channeled, you know, unethical marketing. I think they it just escapes them, and it's ignorance. And there's not a ton of culpability and accountability in those things, more than I think that it is completely orchestrated.
It is so interesting that there are things like, you know, what you haven't ever, not neither of us have ever seen like a cigarette commercial because those were outlawed, you know, many, many
Yeah.
years ago. But I've seen a kajillion Zoloft commercials.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that's just feels so bizarre to me. Like, why is one drug banned and one drug is not? Like, it's just that feels weird.
And right now, especially like if you're looking at trends on the internet, we're like, where is the line? Like, we're doing ketamine therapy now. Like, you can go like down to the Greenwich Village in Manhattan and get like LSD therapy right before you go to brunch with your friends, and then like get a, you know, like a bonus at your job in finance. You can do all three things legally in New York now. So like, where is the line? So as a person, not as a marketer, I'm like, man, like burn it all down. Like either market everything or market nothing, you know, like just do it. Yeah, I don't, it's like we look at what are the norms in society and who stands to profit. And if the right people who are in positions of power stand to profit, we're not going to fight to outlaw it. And it's kind of like, as a marketer, I think you have to make peace with your slice of evil, and you have to look at your pie chart as a person and decide what amount of evil you want to have in your life. You know, whether you work in finance or real estate or healthcare, I think there's always going to be a sliver of evil in your pie, especially if you live in a, you know, a democratic capitalist society such as America. But you have to decide how much is in your pie, how much are you getting from the company that you're working for, because they're not all the same. And what are you going to do with your part? And how are you going to try to at least do your best? To not contribute to a system that can, you know, exploit and abuse people, and you just try to do your part. I think there's always that piece of personal responsibility.
Do you have a favorite and least favorite ad?
Oh my goodness. Let's see here. There is an ad that is by Liberty Mutual.
Okay.
And so, you know, like people who watch too much TV and they end up liking really, really bad shows because they watch too much TV. And they're like, if you haven't watched Real Housewives of New Jersey, which I haven't, which I heard is
Oh.
amazing,
I
but
don't I've never seen any housewives.
you're
Like,
like,
I've never
what?
seen a single housewife.
I think I feel like that is like, you know, in my industry, there's so many people who like watch it, but it's like one of those shows, it's like definitely a B show, but people will like kill you if you poo-poo on it. Anyway, I'm
Oh,
saying this because I'm like,
I'm very addicted to like Love is Blind though. So like,
me too.
I'm not speaking from a moral place. I just don't have that channel is all.
So the Liberty Mutual commercial that I love is like the equivalent of Love is Blind. I love it because it's so stupid. It's an actor. It's an actor playing a bad actor, and he's trying to deliver the line of like Liberty Mutual, and he keeps messing it up. And he's like Liberty Bibberty, and I laugh every time. It gets me every time. Like I will cackle out loud. I hate commercials. I'm like, I've worked in this industry for 15 years. I mute most of the commercials that I see on
I hate
TV, and I.
commercials. I
Like,
hate them
I
so
hate them, but
much.
for some reason, that dumb commercial just gets me every fucking time. I think it's so stupid. Least favorite commercial. Don't know. Bank of America had this commercial where they had a song in it that had a song in it that was like, somebody left the gate open. And it's like a kid running out, and I just hate it. And I want to burn down my TV every time I see it.
Okay, but I know what ad you're talking about because after I
Do.
heard that commercial, I saved that song.
See, it's
I
all
love that
relative.
song.
Oh my, but in the commercial, I was like,
Yeah.
kill me now,
And
because
it
this is
wasn't a
for a
kid, it was a
bank.
dog. I think it was like a corgi
Oh
running
my
out of that
God.
fence. I loved that commercial. No,
I
I did
love,
not love the commercial. I loved the
you
song.
loved this song.
I loved the song. It worked on me. Well, the song worked on me.
And I also love like basically anything that Taco Bell does. I just think it's so stupid, and it's just so lovely.
Actually,
And
that I'm about to wrap up, but that's perfectly aligns with the next thing I was going to ask. What's more powerful right now? Like paying 50 grand to be in Vogue or paying 50 grand for an influencer to mention you on TikTok?
TikTok. The most influential thing that a brand could do right now is to put a shit ton of content out on TikTok and go viral with it, because it's everything is a game of relevance now. It's not about how many people that you can get to see your ad. It's how many people you can get to resonate with the content that you're putting out. And that's the whole game. And I think what we're going to see is like the headless brands of it all. What I mean by that is that brands forever, since brands have been brands, have had to have a singular identity, that a consistent look and feel and tone of voice and story, and that gets packaged up and spliced and diced across all media. In the world of modern social media, I think brands are going to be a lot of things to a lot of different kinds of people, and they're going to reach scale that way. They're not going to need to have like the one commercial to rule them all. They'll have the 55 TikToks with the 25 influencers that
Oh,
matter for the 400 groups of people.
dozens of different. Every single one of those TikTok influencers has a different strategy, and it all works. And each of them is reaching a different million people, and none of those million people know each other. Like it's so smart. And what brought it up was Doja Cat earlier this week did the thing where she's like, "Listen, you are about to hear me do an ad for Taco Bell. It is the stupidest song in the entire world. Please just understand that this was contractual obligation." And the thing is, I'll guarantee you that video is also part of the ad, because
Oh,
that video is the part,
1,000%.
like, and then she puts out this just ridiculous, just her deadpanning this rap that she did not write. I mean, like, come on. And it the whole thing, and I was just like, all of this is brilliant. All of it. And I like all of it had to be planned, because it's just,
All of it was.
it's phenomenal.
I can guarantee that it was. And every and on all of the brands want to do basically what Lil Nas X is doing, which is having a complete and total native understanding of the platforms and the audiences, and
That
understanding how to show
guy.
up in a self-aware way. But you know, we kind of got to get the old white guys out of the boardrooms first.
Ooh,
So,
let's do that. Let's do that. Let's just let's schedule that.
I just checked my schedule, and I think their shift is supposed to end like pretty
It's
soon.
Tuesday.
Oh my God, I hope everyone doesn't think I'm an evil advertising witchess after this interview, but if they did,
No,
I'm
they
just
do. No, they absolutely do. Abs yes. No. So I opened all of this up, and I'm going to close it in the same way. But instead of me coming up with all of my favorite representations of marketing and media, what's yours? Are you like, is Mad Men it for you? Or are you like, what's
What?
your marketer? Like, who's your, when you think of marketing and like film, TV, whatever, like what's marketing to you?
Oh
What's your
my
favorite?
gosh. This is such a hard question. I think I'm blinking. Just edit this whenever we get to the answer so I sound like I answer it really fast.
No, actually, I'm going to add dead space. I'm just going to add dead space. I'm going to like just record some room noise and just add it. And it's just like 10 minutes.
13 going on 30 whenever Jennifer Garner presents her. No, I'm kidding.
I hate that movie so much. How do you like that movie? I knew you when those movies came. Like, come on, that's a bad movie. Why do people like that movie
Oh
now?
my God, I just use that because that's like whenever I like talk to my mom's friends, they're like, "Are you like Jennifer Garner and just like
Yes, and I wear butterfly clips, and I'm also 13 years old. Yes.
What's the show that's about video games on HBO with the guy from Always Sunny? I'm trying to remember what it's called. Mythic Quest.
Mythic Quest, that's on Apple TV. I love that show.
Okay.
I love that show.
Mythic.
Is that marketing? I guess it's
You know what? I
marketing.
know it's gaming, but every conversation that happens in that show, I'm like, I've been in that
That
room.
is such a good show.
I know. So
That is
Mythic
such
Quest
a good
is pretty
show.
close to like what's going on.
Really? I love that
Oh
show.
no.
God,
Yeah,
that guy's
it's
hot.
yes, sir. I mean the body Andy. I love it. But yes, I would when I watch that show, I like die because I'm like, oh, we're in this. And whenever I'm in Broad City, but in a very indirect way, like whenever they're talking to official people and their Broad City girls are just being themselves, it's kind of like looking in the mirror.
Haley Grant. It's so weird to call you Haley Grant. You've been Haley Grant for a long time, though.
Haley Grant for a
Haley Grant,
decade, baby.
thank you so much for being here and giving us a peek behind the curtain of marketing. I don't know if you're someone that wants to invite people to follow you around on social media, but if people are curious about what you do, is there anywhere that they can connect with you?
Of course. I am on Instagram.
I thought you were
My
going to be like the first person to ever pitch a LinkedIn on a podcast. Like,
Oh
oh, hook
my
me up on
God.
LinkedIn.
I'm on LinkedIn, Haley R. Keller. No, Instagram, my name is Haylet. It's like Hamlet, but Haylet. And I'm on TikTok, and sometimes I talk about marketing, but like I haven't really done it yet, but I'm probably gonna need to.
I
And I'm
love that I dragged
Haylet.
you to TikTok. I
Oh,
love
you, I
that.
think you did. And
I
the name is Haylet 9000.
such a
Don't ask.
2003 name. I
I really
love
needed it. You know, Winx 182 was taken, so what was I gonna do?
it. Oh, thank you so much for being here.
Course.
My eternal gratitude to Haley Grant, Vice President of Strategy at VaynerMedia, for being my guest here today. I hope that it helped to answer some of your questions that you might have had, or maybe some questions you didn't even realize that you had about what marketing is, what the real job of it is, how much of it is in our lives, and how much of it sort of either controls or reflects or reacts to how we as individuals are thinking and how we as society are thinking and reacting and buying and making decisions. And maybe next time you see one of those ads where you think, how in the world did this get by so many people to make it to air, to make it to the internet, to make it to an ad in my magazine of choice? Maybe you'll be able to remember this particular episode and think, oh yeah, I know how that works. Thank you so much for tuning in to Head on Fire. If you would like to support this show, there are a number of ways to help. Remember to share the show with your friends on social media. You can also like or rate the show 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you download shows. And while you're there, leave a review. Anything helps, a few words, some emojis, all of it helps to recommend the show to other listeners like you. You can also help keep the show free and producing regularly by joining my Patreon on a monthly basis. Patrons receive additional audio and video content. In the case of this particular episode, there was about 22, 23 minutes of us just like chatting about anything and everything under the sun. It's a great conversation. You all will love it. but you also get archived episodes, a private Discord server, and a monthly book club. This month, we are reading The Ghost, A Cultural History by Susan Owens. You can sign up at patreon.com/headonfirepod. Or if a one-time monetary donation is more your speed, you can buy me a coffee at ko-fi.com/headonfirepod. Connect with me on most forms of social media at headonfirepod everywhere. And remember, the real marketing industry looks a whole lot less like Mad Men and a whole lot more like Beavis and Butthead. Be well.